Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi guys, Adam here. Thank you so much for listening to the Front Three podcast. Just a quick heads up, unfortunately my microphone actually broke not long into recording this episode. Unbeknownst to me, unfortunately you won't be able to miss it. As such, I'd like to apologize for the sound quality. Hopefully you don't find it too distracting and it isn't too much of a problem. But apologies once again and enjoy the podcast. It is Thursday, which means it's time for the Front Three Q&A podcast with me, Adam Boltwood, and the one and only Dave O'Brien.
Hello, welcome back, guys. Thanks for getting us to number 17 at its peak in the last podcast. I want to thank the listeners for that. Nothing to do with me, nothing to do with Adam or Lawrence or Chris, it's you guys.
It is the whole.
Great work.
That got us there. Thanks, guys. We cracked the top 20. It doesn't happen often, but thank you so much for getting us there. Thank you so much for listening. Lawrence and Chris are not with us today. It's just the two of us, Dave, to get through all of the Hull's questions. Before all that, though, we should say our thoughts go out to the family of Graham Taylor, the former England, Aston Villa and Watford manager who died today at the age of 72.
Yeah, you know, he took Watford from, I think it was around the equivalent of League Two, up to the, you know, the first division, and you know, was runners up in 82-83 first division season in England. And you know, he played a very direct style, he played a very Sam Allardyce, Tony Pulis style of football, and was a big influence on how football was played in England. So it is a massive loss to one of the great tacticians of, you know, our lives, well, not of our lives, of before my life, but of the 80s, shall we say.
Let's get into the Q&A podcast then. First up, as always on a Thursday, it's time for the Hole of the Week. Dave, give us the theme tune.
It's the Hole of, the Hole of the Week. The Hole.
Wow. Mirrors cracking right now in so many listeners' houses.
Sorry, guys.
It's time for the Hole of the Week. Comment of the Week, guys. All you have to do if you want to be Hole of the Week, if you want to be the best listener of the Front Three podcast, all you have to do is leave us a rating and a review on iTunes. It really is that simple. This week's Hole of the Week goes to Hilts116, whose review is simply titled Unbelievable. The Front Three is quality. Loving to hear a mixture of different viewpoints. I'm going to say it one more time because I just knocked the microphone. The Front Three is quality, loving to hear a mixture of different viewpoints from different teams, love listening to the show, and gutted there are not more episodes. Hilts, I've got some good news for you. The bonus podcasts are coming back. That's right, ladies and gentlemen. We first did a bonus podcast with the one and only Rory from CFC Fan TV way back in November. But it's time now, guys, to get them going again. We did promise they were coming every week. Didn't quite happen. But we've got some great guests lined up this week. I'm delighted to say we've got Gary Flavel, a.k.a. Flav, from the Fighting Cock podcast.
I honestly thought you were about to say, we have got Gary Goals live on the podcast for the first time ever.
Gary Goals. That's the ultimate. But, like, we'll stop making the Front Three once we've hit that point because you're not getting any better than that. For now, though, no, we have to settle. We've got to settle for Flav from the Fighting Cock podcast and, of course, Ball Street on YouTube, which I know a lot of you guys enjoy. He's going to join us on Saturday morning to talk in-depth about Spurs and some of the problems and frustrations with modern football. So look out for that in your podcast feed. A really great interview with him. It was a lot of fun to record. So hopefully you have a lot of fun listening to it. Questions, Dave. Only one place to start today, and that is Dimitri Payet. Slaven Bilic coming out today saying that the Frenchman is refusing to play for the club. He's gone on strike. Let's hear Bilic talking to the media earlier today.
I got something for you, yeah, to tell you. Had a situation with a player. It is Dimitri Payet. He wants to leave. The club, us, as I said so many times before, we don't want to sell him. We said hundreds of times that we don't want to sell our best players. We want to keep them. He is definitely one of them, or our best player. That's why we gave him such a long contract. I informed him with that, and he refused to play for us.
Feel a bit sorry for Slaven Bilic. Sounds a bit depressed there, has to be said. But as he said, Payet says he no longer wants to play for West Ham. He's apparently missed training sessions in protest that he wants to leave the club. Bilic insists they're not selling Payet, who joined from Marseille for £10 million in June 2015. The news coming out this afternoon is that West Ham have rejected a £20 million from Marseille, trying to bring back Dimitri Payet to the club. I mean, Dave, first off, before we get into the questions about this whole situation, what do you make of it?
It's pretty mental, isn't it, that a player again that's seen as an absolute hero at West Ham United. You know, those fans are... They built a very special relationship with him in his short year there. And I feel sorry for the fans. I really do. I feel sorry for these West Ham fans that have supported him, that have, you know, praised him for so long. And him just being like, all right, actually, lads, you know, after I did well at the Euros, after I'm in a pretty, you know, probably in the peak of my career, I want to leave. I accept his decision, but why not make that in the summer? You know, keep that legacy at West Ham. Keep that relationship with the fans. Now, I feel it's very bad time. The missing training is very unprofessional, very, very poor on his behalf. In terms of Slaven Bilic, he obviously had a similar instance with West Ham when he was wanted to move for Tottenham a while ago, and in fact called Harry Redknapp a bastard. So maybe Payet's seen that and been like, "Well, you've done it, manager. So why don't I do that as well?" So maybe that is a slight loss of control from Bilic. I don't know. I'm reading a little bit into it, but I feel for the West Ham United fans.
I don't expect West Ham to sell him. I think they'll force him to stay. To be honest, in this window, because I don't think they can afford to lose him in many ways, especially with the difficulties they have in this season. But Michael Folletti writes in on Twitter, thank you for your question. He said, do you think it's in Payet's best interest to stay in England or move abroad? The suggestions are that he's upset and trying to force a move away. He apparently wants to go back to Marseille, which I find... I'm not sure I see his point of view there, because surely, Dave, at this point, he should be aiming for a club that potentially can win league titles and potentially more.
It's an interesting one. Obviously, Dimitri Payet had a connection with Marseille, and they sold him because they had to raise funds. They were going through a bit of a tricky time financially. Obviously, Thauvin going as well because of the stadium build and so forth. You know, the club investing back into its own system. But it does seem like a weird one. Something that I've looked into and it should be, by the time you're listening to this, it will be on my YouTube channel, just to look at potential places where he could go. I've looked at three that could be quite interesting. So the question is, should he stay in England? I think he should go to Arsenal. I think that Arsenal would be absolutely perfect for Payet. I think it'd be perfect for Wenger, perfect for Mesut Ozil, perfect for Alexis Sanchez. Imagine that as a three-pronged attack, or, you know, the left side of a 4-3-2-1 with potentially Ramsey playing on that right hand side. But also out there, you know, if you look at abroad, if you're a Champions League team, right, and you've obviously got money because you're in the Champions League, why have you not already bid for Dimitri Payet? For me, that doesn't make any sense. Payet's a player that could come on and make a difference in a massive game, or potentially you start him. The volume of chances that he's created over the last season and a half, or the last 3 to 4 to 5 years, absolutely incredible. He's up there with the elite chance creators in Europe. So if you were Bayern Munich, if you're Real Madrid, if you're Barcelona, if you're any of those sides, buying Payet, if you don't consider it, I think that's stupid, because he's not cup tied, because he can play in the Champions League, he can play for any of those sides, and it's absolutely fine. That's a big, big thing. That's upgrading your team. That little extra notch, you know, for example, it's not going to massively upgrade the likes of Bayern Munich, who have a plethora of wingers, the likes of Real Madrid, where Real Madrid potentially could upgrade with Bale out and that I think that it would fit there. Barcelona, again, they've got MSN. But you've thrown someone like Payet in there as being another option, bang, you've massively upgraded yourself tactically and in terms of diversification of how to unlock the door. And that's what some teams have been lacking at certain points. You think of Barcelona have not been at their best in central midfield. Maybe having someone like Payet that's so direct in that final third could be a good answer. But yeah, I don't get it. I don't get it. As soon as you know, this morning, bang, straight on the phone to David Gold. Yeah, we'll have Dimitri Payet. How much is it going to cost us?
You have to say, though, Dimitri Payet, not particularly professional, going on strike, refusing to play for the club. Like you said, though, you can understand why he potentially wants to leave with the situation they're in, with it being a short career, with it being he's 29 now, you know, it could be time for him to move on. But, you know, Marco Pepe Bielsa, great name on Twitter, writing in, why are talented players such divas? Payet now, Eden Hazard last season, throwing tantrums when things don't go their way. I think that's a simple one. Things usually go their way. For players like this, I think they're in a different world. They're in their own bubble. Mm. Everything's sort of catered for them. Everything's sort of made for their comfort. So when things, you know, when they want something, they try and force it and think that they can get away with it, essentially. But this has gone down terribly with West Ham fans, and you can't really blame them, can you?
Not at all. Yeah, you can't blame them at all. It's I think it kind of what's quite interesting if we take away the football side of it and we look at like the psychological approach. It's quite interesting if we're applying the management style to these divas in quotation marks. Yes, you do need to potentially you need to manage your stars a bit different. You know, Eric Cantona with Sir Alex Ferguson was you know a great example of that. You know, someone that got suspended for 6 months, Ferguson kept him involved with the team, whatever, and obviously repaid him and helped the group of, you know, the class of 92 progressed to where they got to and helped United in the next few seasons. But, you know, the two examples you met there, Dimitri Payet and Eden Hazard. Let's start with Eden Hazard. So Eden Hazard at Chelsea, obviously Mourinho had started to lose control and didn't have that same, you know, authoritarian approach that potentially in seasons past he had where it was his road or the highway. Eden Hazard, Fabregas, potential player power, Timo Courtois that's been linked for being the mole and being the guy responsible for all that rubbish in the background, allegedly, could have been the problem there. But then you go over to Bilic, and I don't see him being that commanding leader. I see him being a bit too close to the players, being a bit too pally with the players. I don't know. I'm not in the dressing room. Yeah, exactly. And there's no gap between my world, the highway, and quite frankly, you know, you've got to sell him ASAP. That's what you've got to do. You've got to get the money in. You've got to try and buy a striker. Obviously, West Ham lacking goals. I feel like with Mikel Antonio, you play him at right midfield. You've got a player that can create. You've got a player that can make things happen. So I'm not too worried about West Ham in that sort of sense. Payet's gone. Yeah, okay, bad egg. You know, see you later.
But bring surely the impact, left, on that left-hand side. Surely the contribution he makes.
Yeah, I think West Ham have bigger problems. I think that West Ham, the issue is not creating chance. I think they've got some very, very gifted technical players there that would be able to pull together. Like the likes of Andre Ayew, who's been injured for the whole season. He's a good player. Very, very good player. And he can step up and he can become this focal point at the side with the likes of Antonio, with the likes of Lanzini. So I'm not too worried in that category. It's defensively that they've looked very shaky, especially at right back. You know, we've seen, and left back, if I've completely lost the fella's name, the left back of West Ham.
Aaron Cresswell.
Yeah, so when he's playing, West Ham look really, really good at the back on that left-hand side. When he's not there, massive worry. Same at right back. So that's the big two issues for me, as well as up front, obviously. So if they can get this money from Payet, sign a decent left-back, sign a very, very good right-back, you know, a higher quality right-back, and then a striker. You know, they've linked with this Hogan fella from Brentford. Yeah. Maybe they'll be all right, and Dimitri Payet will just be a distant memory. I feel it's quite similar for me when Carlos Tevez left United, and it broke my heart. Same boat for West Ham fans. And I feel for you.
It happens.
And if you want to come around to my house, I'll give you a hug.
And a cup of tea?
Yeah, because they found the house, so they get they unlock like the
they
double.
They get the tea. They unlock that reward. It's like a video game. Exactly. Next question is from Izzy Savine LaClaus. Thank you for your question. She tweeted us earlier saying, casually tuning into my first Front Three podcast, and the guys go fully in on the state of the country. Hashtag ideal. Your rant did seem to be quite popular last week, Dave. People enjoyed that.
I reserve them for certain times where certain things have been getting under my skin for a while. Yeah, and I think it's just, so, you know, we do talk about football and we should continue this as a football podcast. But then when there is certain things that happen in your country that have been annoying you, like been stabbing at you for so long.
Football doesn't exist in isolation. You know, all these other things affect it. So no. I think it's interesting to bring that into the conversation. The question from Izzy, though, is apart from the financial gain, what will the expansion of the World Cup bring to football? So, Infantino, Dave, defending this expansion that was unanimously voted for by FIFA, 248 teams at the World Cup 2026. He's saying that the change is based on sporting merit. It's not about money. It's hard not to be cynical, though, when FIFA are going to make an extra £500 million, reportedly, from expanding the tournament, although Infantino claims that will be reinvested in the game. I mean, there's reason to be dubious about that. And of course, Infantino himself is up for re-election in 2019. It feels like his re-election bid has started already. And I mean, for me, it's just going to dilute the quality of the tournament, which is something that we saw in the Euros last year, Dave.
Yeah, I think that was a big championships. What Portugal went on to win the tournament, they didn't win a game in the group stages, which... The tournament format's wrong if that can happen, if that situation arises. It's completely wrong for me. What I'd hope that this would do was it pushed the gift of football around the world. And, you know, these you know, countries that need a bit more development, you know, the likes of, let's just say, Liechtenstein, for an example, or Andorra, or whoever are picking up, you know, more money, and then, you know, it's going into the coaching system, and then the young players are getting more training and so forth. In an ideal world, that's exactly what it would be. But unfortunately, I think we all know what it means. It means more games, more money, TV money, more avenue for sponsorship and so forth. But it's just dependent on where that money goes.
I feel like I can almost kind of see the romantic view of it. And I think Infantino was trying to put this across, but again, you can't help but sort of be dubious about it all. But he's trying to say, you know, if a country like, say, Liechtenstein, like you're saying there, or whoever qualifies for the World Cup, the way he phrased it, which I thought was quite interesting, was he said the world stands still for the World Cup. You know, it doesn't happen for a lot of events. It doesn't happen for a lot of things in life. And if a country like that qualifies for the World Cup, the whole nation sort of is focused on that and is focused on football. And you'd hope that that sort of promotes the popularity of football around the world at the same time. I think that's a very rose-tinted way to look at it. When you talk about how many groups of three are they talking about doing instead, it's going to be 16 groups of three teams that proceed in a knockout stage of 32. I don't think they're doing it for purely benevolent reasons, even though Infantino would say it's football reasons. And the tournament itself, it feels like it's making it worse, essentially. What's going to happen in qualifying? What's going to happen in these groups of three to sort of determine who the top two are? There's talk of if there's draws, that those draws will go down to penalties to avoid, you know, teams contriving to draw in order to knock out someone else. There's talk of the rankings. There's talk of the rankings coming in. You know, if it's a deadlock in the group, the rankings will be used as a factor to determine where they finish.
It's such a load of rubbish.
It's things like that. Where
it's just like, what?
You can look at it and go, yeah, you know, the quality could increase. We could see all these incredible players coming in who haven't had a chance to shine in the international tournament, these countries as well. We could see some fantastic players and some fantastic teams. But at the same time, you think, well, the tournament's going to be worse. A 48-team World Cup is, it almost makes qualifying Egypt pointless as well. So it's difficult to understand in some ways. But, you know, it's almost unsurprising in others that FIFA would do this, because, you know, it feels like they've essentially ruined the World Cup, which is a real shame, because, you know, with the overexposure of football, we have so much football nowadays. You know, it's Friday night football, there's football almost every day of the week. It's hard to see an event as something, even the Champions League, for me personally, you know, it's the same teams being drawn against each other every year. It's starting to lose that sort of special factor for me. The World Cup, though, is still the peak of that. But even recent World Cups, the quality seems to have dipped somewhat. And then, you know, in 9 years' time, when this does eventually come along, the quality is going to be even worse, it feels like.
I find it really... I can understand why, you know, there is too much football these days and people don't like it, but I don't know. I think it's perfect, like, because I'm a football fan and I love watching any game of football, any team, because I find it so fascinating and interesting. I think it's a fine amount. I think the football every day is fine for me. It means I can pick up football anytime I want. And it's, I was speaking to Stu from Ball Street today, and he was telling me about how he used to buy clips of the Eredivisie on VHS. So he used to buy the games on VHS, and then they get sent 2 weeks later over. So say, for example, we're playing this Saturday. Two weeks after that, he'd get the video. And I think that we're in such a lucky position now, where we are in our, you know, me being in the position now where I want to progress into being a football analyst or, you know, doing that type of thing. And there's so much football for me to watch. I have such a big background of what I can talk about on the different little aspects of Italian defending, Spanish football, German football. I think I love it personally. And I do think, you know, the World Cup will lose a bit of its shebang, shall I say, in terms of what it's going to get at the start.
Shebang.
But then when you get into the last 16... Yeah, it's very technical, Adam. The last 16, the last eight, it's going to start, you know, you'll see teams emerge out of nowhere. And I still think it's going to be good. It's just the group stages are going to be a little bit boring.
Yeah.
It'll be a slog. It'll be a long month.
I mean, on that note, the next question comes in from Carlos Zaldivar on that talk of yourself being a football analyst, Dave. He wants to know, you guys all work in football media. Chris, of course, is a journalist. Lawrence is a director. Myself is as a producer. And Dave as a sort of an analyst slash presenter. Would you recommend a career in your respective fields? Obviously, can't speak for Chris or Lawrence who aren't here. But yeah, if you wanna be a producer, if you want to work in sort of digital media and stuff, I'd say the main thing is what better place to work or what better area to work in than something you're passionate about. It's always a job is always easier if you enjoy it, if you are interested in what you're working on. And, you know, football's one of the main things in my life that I enjoy. So to get to do that every day and work on that and sort of be a part of the whole game in some small, tiny way is great. I'd say that's the main thing. Do something you're passionate about, not necessarily the career itself, but if you can work in an industry or work in a job that you are happy and passionate about working, then I think you'd be laughing.
Yeah, I kind of agree with that. I think you've got to follow your passions, whatever gets you excited, whatever is there when, you know, you could do it every day, let's say, just something that you enjoy, really. There's no point in going through life and working a job that you find boring, or working a job that makes you, you know, not upset, but makes you sort of a depressing job where you go there and you hate what you're doing. I think you've got to follow that. And I think that's a bit of advice that I'd say, like, do what you want to do. Like, the world, there's so many options in the world to go down. There's so many things you can do. Don't be stuck in the little chasm of doing something that you hate. Like, if you don't like teaching, don't do be a teacher.
Yeah.
But then again, you know, there's always, life is a journey. Life is very long. And, you know, we're working in football now. 3 years time we might not be, you know what I mean? Always keep options open.
Yeah, you know, I feel very lucky to be doing something I love. If you're lucky enough to do that, then you know, that's fantastic.
Chase them dreams.
Matt Brownie Cake, long time listener, long time friend, he said, have you ever met someone for the first time and then they slag off your team and you try not to pull faces, #awkward, #my team is better than yours? Not that I can recall. I definitely think it has happened. I can't think of a specific circumstance, but yeah. Spurs are somewhat of an unpopular team. It kind of surprises me sometimes because I'm always like, well, that's what Spurs have done. We were rubbish for so long. You know, when I was growing up, what have we done to offend you? Yeah, I mean, surely, go and hate Chelsea. Go and hate Man United, you know? Who won everything during the 90s and the 2000s.
Hate me, Adam. Hate me.
Go and hate Liverpool or something, you know. I don't care. But yeah, has anyone ever done that to you, David?
It's like a personal like thing that really gets you. Why do you hate Spurs? We haven't done anything wrong, God damn it.
I just find it a bit surprising because I, you know, obviously I'm biased, but I find Spurs somewhat inoffensive. Maybe it's the fans, I don't know. Has that ever happened to you, Dave? You've walked up and they've been like, oh, bloody hate Man United fans. You're like, all right, mate, how's it going?
No, I like that. I like being hated. It's one of my favourite things in the world.
You personally are a Man United fan.
Everything, mate. You know, I like, since them haters, come on, fire me up. Get me to where I want to go to. Tell me I'm shit. Tell me I'm rubbish, Adam.
Oh, it's like, it's motivation for you, basically.
Yeah.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I like it, but I think United, like when that the Fergie time, you can't really be like United are shit because they were always so dominant. It's like when David Moyes was manager and Van Gaal was manager. I hated it when people were like United are so shit right now. When I'm sitting there and I'm watching it, like I'm watching 90 minutes probably two times a week, and I'm like, oh my god, this football is just it's just disgraceful. And that was the thing that slightly annoyed me when people were like, oh, United are rubbish this year. I'm like, I bloody know. What do you think? I've been closing my eyes when the games are on. Anyway, football's about opinions.
It's all about opinions. Santi says, what should I eat for dinner? I recommended a hearty spaghetti bolognese. You can't go wrong. Beautiful pasta, nice tomato sauce, a rich garlicky flavour in there. Get some celery in there. Get some carrots in there. Mushrooms do not hurt either. That's what I recommended, Dave. What would you recommend that Santi cooks for his dinner?
So spaghetti bolognese is a good one. If you want to cheat as well,
love it.
The Lloyd Grossman sauce is very, very good. Probably my favourite. I've
tested
a lot of them out.
It is pretty good.
But in terms of what I'm eating right now, got a bit of dal, which is absolutely delicious. Got off one of my mates. His mum cooked it, and it's probably the best dal I've ever had.
His mum cooked dal specifically, mum. Or it was just left over?
No, I think she might have done, actually. I think it was like, I might give some to Dave. So, yeah,
that
hero. So yeah, dal, maybe some Indian food. Indian food is always great in flavour and cheap to very, very cheap to cook if you're using like chickpeas, lentils, things like that. So if you're working for a budget, Indian food is where you want to go.
Decent, mate. Me and you might head out to Tayab's later. Wonderful Indian restaurant in Whitechapel. Guys, if you're in London, go and check it out. It is decent. Next question is from John Gibbons.
One of the best.
John Gibbons. Weirdly enough, the question is for Adam and Dave. It's perfect. For this podcast, the front two themselves. Which would you rather win this season if you could only win one, the Europa League or the FA Cup, and why? Now, correct me if I'm wrong, Dave, I think we would both say the Europa League because obviously you qualify for the Champions League. There's that sort of gain there. Great to win what was formerly the UEFA Cup as well. Get another one of them on the belt. The FA Cup, you've already won it. You won it last year, of course. So, you've already had that glory. So, for me, I'd love to win the FA Cup because there's a certain romance to it. For the first time since 1991, I think it'd be fantastic to Spurs to get another trophy. The first since 2008. It's almost 10 years now. It'd be great to get some silverware. But the Europa League has the added bonus of you're in the Champions League. You're in, lads.
So, yeah, I think I definitely think Europa League. But for me, it's not really about anything about the Champions League. I like the Europa League as a tournament. I like it as it's the second big European thing. I think the European Cup is the biggest tournament in world football. So the Europa League for me is second. I really enjoy it year on year. You see teams that emerge out of nowhere that play some really good football. You're diversifying your knowledge and so forth. The FA Cup, I still like it and I can appreciate the FA Cup. But the Europa League's got that extra mystique about it. It's going away and whatever. Just a little thing on the FA Cup as well, just for Man United fans to remember that Marouane Fellaini scored the winner in the semi-final of the FA Cup and then he got the assist in the final. But Bastian Schweinsteiger gets a larger round of applause when he enters and leaves the field. That's just a little reminder, guys, to sort yourselves out.
Sort yourselves out. Sandini said, should this be Wenger's last season? If so, will they face similar consequences to Sir Alex leaving Manchester United? I think it's getting harder and harder for people to make the case that Arsene Wenger should stay. I think We're always waiting for that moment where Wenger could leave after a trophy, ideally after winning the Premier League again. You'd love to see Wenger achieve that for Arsenal after all this time and step down. I think it's looking less and less likely to happen. If it was going to happen, it was going to happen last season when it was so up and down, it was so crazy. That was Arsenal's chance. I think now you look at, say, Conte at Chelsea, you look at, say, what Klopp's doing at Liverpool, you look at what Pochettino's doing at Spurs, you can see the progress, you can see the way things are moving, and it's hard for me, for people to convince me that, yes, Arsene Wenger is the man to lead Arsenal forward. I think it's time to move on now. It's time to get someone else in. We've spoken before about how they probably missed their chance to get in someone like Pep Guardiola, like Jurgen Klopp, who could inherit the project and evolve it and take it to the next level. But I still think it's time for Arsenal to move on, Dave.
Absolutely not, Adam. The grass isn't always greener on the other side. As a Man United fan, I've taken that right in the face.
It is greener.
They with the likes of David Moyes.
No.
See, this is the thing. It's all presumption. It's all based on the next manager that's coming in is going to instantly do it. Yeah, Carlo Ancelotti would be a great shout in terms of how we could push the side on. They could drop a little bit more counter-attack, and that would be absolutely perfect. Or someone like Max Allegri. He's probably my favourite manager in the world at the moment, Max Allegri, in terms of his tactical diversity. Currently playing a Christmas tree formation at Juve with Pjanic and Dybala behind Gonzalo Higuain. Great stuff over there. But the grass, again, the grass isn't always greener. Arsenal fans are now, Wenger's this, Wenger's that. Yeah. But what has he done for the club? Like, just get behind him.
Yeah,
there's negativity, and the players can feel it.
I'm saying.
But I think it's nothing to do with this and so forth. It's,
go on.
You what? I'll fight you.
I'm not saying they shouldn't be getting behind the manager. I'm not saying it'll be an instant success, and there will be those issues that happen, as happened to Manchester United when Schreinig left. Although, in hindsight, perhaps David Moyes was the wrong appointment, and the consequences wouldn't have been so severe if they had made a different appointment. But I think it's just time to move on. It's got to happen at some point. Why not now? Why not potentially when there could be certain managers, as you mentioned, who may be available? It's got to happen at some point. Just do it now.
So that I imagine Allegri is going to be at Juve for maybe another two seasons, maybe a season and a half. So at the end of this year, Allegri ain't going to be available. Carlo Ancelotti's just taken over at Bayern Munich. He's usually, his cycle is 2 years minimum. So he's not likely to leave there.
So it
leaves you with nothing. I reckon, right, something stupid's going to happen, like Thierry Henry will turn up or Lee Dixon will be the manager. Oh, and then Arsenal will go through a period like United where they'll be in transition for 3 years and Arsenal fans will be on Arsenal fan TV being like, we should have kept Wenger. What are you fucking talking about? You know what I mean? Like,
that's pretty come on, guys. Impression.
Who are they going to get? Alan Pardew?
They should get a good Big British Sam's manager, gone. Dave, Big Sam like Thierry Henry. It just makes sense. Kenny J. Robolo says, can Real Madrid win their first ever treble this season? The league is not nailed on, but it's looking ominous for them, as we said on the weekend review, Dave. A Champions League, no one's ever done it back to back, which makes me think perhaps it will be tough for Real Madrid to do that. But the form they're on, this winning undefeated streak they're on. It's possible, Dave.
I'm going to take some more stick from Real Madrid fans on Twitter and say that this unbeaten streak has been rather fortuitous. And this weekend, Sampaoli, Sevilla are going to hand them one hell of a beating and they're going to drop down.
Wow, that
they're
is a bold prediction. They're
going to take
prediction.
A beating there.
That is a sort of bold prediction I like.
And if they don't... And if they don't sign Dimitri Payet, they ain't winning jack this season.
Wow. You want Real Madrid to sign Dimitri?
It's a slight joke, yeah.
I think bold Payet would fit. Shouts all over the shop.
Yeah, sorry, Adam.
Ajden.
There's a title for you, mate.
Ajdenen said, what is your favourite ice cream flavour? Great question. The correct answer is chocolate chip mint ice cream. Absolutely deadly ice cream. If you're in an ice cream shop or whatever. Otherwise, maybe a bit of strawberry cheesecake, Haagen-Dazs, the stuff you can get in supermarkets. That's pretty, pretty decent. Dave, hit me.
Have you ever had apple crumble ice cream?
No, I haven't, but it sounds bloody
like
great.
Unbelievable.
How do they do that? Yeah. How does that make? Big fan of that. That doesn't make. I like apple crumble with a bit of ice cream.
Yeah,
apple. So how does that even
combine
work?
Both.
But where's the crumble? Where's the crunch?
Like, it was sort of like an apple. The crumble was like kind of on top. It was like basically it was like an apple crumble, but imagine you got a crumble top layer, ice cream second layer, and then the apple the third layer. Oh, it was insane. Absolutely insane. But that, I've only had that once in my life, I think, but it was great. Apart from that, I'm going to go Raspberry Ripple, because that's a basic ice cream that any guy can get. You know, you've probably got to search long and hard for this apple crumble ice cream, but Raspberry Ripple, any shop, sorted.
Basic. Very basic, but I like it. I like it a lot. Question here from The Shining Ocean. Nice name. Chelsea have just been granted permission for a new stadium. Is the increased capacity worth the struggle moving causes? As far as I knew, they've got permission for an expanded stadium. They're going to rebuild Stamford Bridge. The capacity is going to go up to 60,000. It's going to cost at least £500 million. Could be ready for the 2021-22 seasons. Obviously, they've got to relocate while that work's going on. Need a temporary home for around three seasons. Could be Wembley Stadium. Tottenham supposed to have a ground share deal in place for next season there at Wembley, which might make that a problem, although they haven't confirmed that. They could also go to Twickenham. That's a potential option. You know, it's not ideal, Dave, but these sort of things have to be done in order to make rebuilding and make expanding a stadium a reality. And that is a necessity, it seems to be, in this day and age where, you know, although matchday revenue is almost declining in its importance to the clubs, with TV revenues ever growing, it still is a massive revenue stream for these clubs. And getting those seats in and getting those paying customers in every single week does sustain your revenue streams and your business.
Yeah, massively. I think with Chelsea, they've kind of missed a trick since Abramovich has taken over. Obviously, he's pumped loads of money into the club, but they never expanded the stadium. So if we're just looking at revenues to compare what they're getting out of stadiums club by club, big difference between the top five clubs being Real Madrid top, Arsenal second, Bayern Munich fourth, sorry, Barcelona third, and then Manchester United fifth. The gap between Chelsea and sixth is pretty big. It's €22 million from what Chelsea are getting in revenue per season versus what Man United are. Chelsea at €85 million, United at 107. So this stadium should have come a lot earlier in the Abramovich era. It should have been one of those things. They focus on youth development. They focus on the stadium. And that would have been a good pillar in Chelsea's evolution under Abramovich. And unfortunately, it's been a bit late, but it's happening now, which is good. So it is about climbing back. And Liverpool, obviously, as well, expanding their stadium and getting more cash that way. So I think it's a clever thing to do. But again, on the stats there that I just read off, only Real Madrid have made more money from their stadium in 2015 than Arsenal. So Arsenal are going to be an interesting proposition in coming years.
Question here from John Shin, long-time listener, long-time friend. Another food-based question. First off, he says, favourite pasta sauce? And then he said, what is your alcohol pairing? I assume with that pasta sauce, is it wine? Is it beer? My favourite pasta sauce, I mean, it's hard to beat a bolognese for me. I do love a little arrabbiata, a bit of a spicy tomato sauce. I've got a bit of a homemade pasta recipe I go for, which is chicken, spinach, sweet corn, and a bit of chorizo in there. It's pretty good. And you've got to go for red wine with that. Red wine, you put it in the sauce, you drink a glass, happy days. What are you saying, Dave?
Yeah, no, I reckon bolognese is probably number one. But I do like, I prefer the tomato-based pasta sauces than your white sauces. But
yeah.
I definitely want to get back into, I want to cook a carbonara at some point. You know, a classic carbonara, no cream.
Dangerous.
The one that, you know, you throw the yolk in and whatever and it's delicious. But yeah, I prefer red sauces over white. So anything with tomato base is very nice. Arrabbiata, I like once in a while, but not every day. I quite like, you know, your prawn linguinis, that type of thing. But yeah, it's got to be red wine with red sauces, unfortunately. No beer.
Not with a pasta, you know. You have one maybe before with your star. You have one after.
I agree.
Got to get a bit of red wine going. I think that's what, if I was to do a front three, come dine with me sort of thing, I might do a little Italian sort of menu, you know. Spaghetti bolognese and that.
Shit.
What would you cook?
We've got to do it.
To impress the lads.
We've got to do it, right? We've got to fucking do it. I don't know what I'd do, actually. I'd either go really super fancy or I'd cook something like standard, like sausage and mash, and then just be like, and what?
Have
that, you know, lads. Like Wall Street type thing, just stand there above the table like.
I don't know if you're entitled to have that attitude if you bang down bangs and mash. You can't have that attitude.
Yeah, but these
you've got to do something with finesse, with talent.
About bangers and mash, Adam. Mate, bangers and mash, you haven't tasted, man.
So
can't throw these accusations at me, mate, without even tasting
the. Are you like freshly making the sausages with your own bare hands, or is this like just store-bought?
Yeah, well,
because then that's a whole different situation.
Challenge accepted.
Wow, okay.
Yeah, homemade bangers and mash.
Wow. I'm pretty confident that you're losing the front three come down with me. But, I've made predictions in the past and been horrifically wrong. So, not a great track record so far. Next question is from Luke Dorr, another long-time listener, another long-time friend of the show. Thoughts on Premier League target Bakayoko, Dave?
Luckily, I've been able to see him live this season, so it gives me even more of an analytical approach over the player. I do like him. I think he's very physical. He keeps things quite safe with the ball at his feet. You know, it is Fabiano that is dictating the play there, but those two as a pairing work very, very well. Fabiano is the guy that sort of holds his position. He's spreading the play left and right. He's sort of dictating the play. He's breaking up. And Bakayoko is sort of that link between the midfield and the attack in a way. He's very good at carrying the ball. His dribble conversion, or dribble completion, should I say, is around 71%, which is pretty decent. That's up to the levels of Paul Pogba, but he's very much a different dribbler than Pogba. You'd say Pogba's your classic year 8 playing against your year 7 dribbler, where he's using his athletic ability and his skills and so forth. Bakayoko is more about power. You know, he's got like a little it's like a little feint off his right foot that he uses to get going, but it's that motion of getting going, and then he uses his power and his physicality to get past players. Very, very good at, like, you know, winning tackles and so forth. Very, very tall, powerful. So it'd be an asset to any Premier League midfield team, but it's finding that relationship and that role with a partner, which could be quite interesting. Because at Manchester United, for example, would Paul Pogba have to play a little bit deeper? Would Paul Pogba have to become that number 6 if he was going to play with Bakayoko? Or would Bakayoko be a Victor Wanyama of Manchester United? Would Pogba still play in the same position, but then United would have to go to potentially change their formation? Now, there's a lot of questions there. Chelsea, potentially a little bit simpler. You know, you're thinking of what they could do there in central midfield. It'd be a direct placement for Kante or Matic. Either of one of those players could easily be transitioned out with Bakayoko, or even quite interestingly, maybe on the left-hand side, left wing-back, right wing-back. Very, I think he'd quite be technical ability. He's got the strength. He's got all the raw materials to play anywhere. So he'd be a good player to have in your team or your squad.
He's got the minerals, is what you're saying, Dave. John says, thoughts on the Arsenal contract renewals, two key names missing. This is, of course, the news that Olivier Giroud, Laurent Koscielny and Francis Coquelin, the French contingent at Arsenal, have all extended their contracts with the club. Koscielny signing until 2020, one of the best Arsenal players, one of the best centre-backs in the Premier League. So good news for Arsenal fans. However, as Johnny's alluding to there, Dave, Mesut Ozil not there at the moment, hasn't signed a new contract as of yet. Alexis Sanchez as well, another player who hasn't signed a new contract. Both of them, I believe their current contracts expire in the summer of 2018. So if they don't sign those contracts, the worry would be that Arsenal would have to sell them this summer in order to raise a significant fee for them. Myself and Chris did discuss the Alexis Sanchez situation and a potential move to PSG on the Front Free YouTube channel this week. Do go and check it out to hear our thoughts on that. As for Mesut Ozil, though, Dave, he came out earlier in the week talking about how his future depends on Arsene Wenger, whether he's going to sign a new contract or not. Do you think maybe that, you know, putting aside for a second, I said this in the video of Chris, that Arsenal shouldn't be in this situation. They should be in a situation where players of the importance of Sanchez and Ozil, who are the two most important players on that team, are allowed to get within 18 months of the end of their contract. Do you think maybe they should let a player like Ozil go? Maybe they could replace him?
Let him go, yeah. First, before I answer this question, Adam, stop what you're doing. Open up a browser on Google Chrome and make sure you type in THEFONT. Have I put that up? Three?
You actually, I think you missed out on R.
Yeah, let's start again.
Quite incredible. I'm not editing that.
Let's start again.
By the way. Just kidding.
Adam, don't make me look stupid again.
THEFRONT 3, yeah. The number 3, not three. The word. Yeah. Yeah, do head there. Not the font 3. You don't want to, yeah, it's rubbish. That. It's just
no, no. No.
The front 3 is the one you want.
I can't believe I spelled that wrong.
I thought the internet glitched. I hope the internet glitched, but no. You
yeah, no, it did. It glitched, guys.
Yeah,
glitched.
Sorry.
I spelled it right.
Totally right.
F-R-O-N-T left 3.
Do go and check it out. But yeah, what do you make of this whole situation, Dave?
It's terrible from Arsenal's perspective. It's stupid. They should be breaking their wage structure because, unfortunately, we've moved to a period of modern football where money, you just got to pay it. To stay competitive, you've got to pay that cash. And to lose two of their best players in recent years would be suicidal for Arsenal, would be a step in the wrong direction. And I feel for
They'd be shooting fans themselves in the face in many ways if they were to let
they would be. Like that Real Sociedad defence at the weekend, yeah. They'd be shooting themselves in the face.
Exactly. Next up, we've got to talk about Man United-Liverpool. Dave, the question coming in from James. He says, are Manchester United going to win? Liverpool not good enough? I think Liverpool are good enough. I think it's going to be a great game. At Old Trafford, Dave, what are your thoughts going into this one?
Well, the bus is coming out again, I think, Adam. I think United will... Actually, I don't know. It's a real tough one because Liverpool have struggled, you know, against Southampton. They were awful. They were really, really poor in the final third. They didn't have any creativity. They did really lack Coutinho in it and his movement. And when he came on, they looked a little bit better, but they still look very, very poor. I think one of the interesting ones is Jordan Henderson. Lucas is just absolute trash on the ball. And Jordan Henderson, forever, you know, the criticism he gets, has been very, very good at defensive midfield on the ball. He's completed more passes than any other Premier League player, I think, this season. So he has been really good and gone a bit under the radar for his importance in this Liverpool team. And I feel without him, they do struggle. But I think he's back this weekend, so it's going to be a great game. It's going to be brilliant. United are banging in form. What could win 10 in it? If they beat Liverpool, it's 10 in a row wins, which is incredible considering the start Mourinho had. United are looking good and they're looking dangerous. The likes of Anthony Martial, Mkhitaryan on the counter-attack, that could be dangerous for Liverpool because Southampton exposed them a lot. Southampton should have won that game 3-0. You know, you think of the chance that Cedric squandered, the chance that Nathan Redmond squandered in the first half. A brilliant save from Karius, who I've got to admit has had a really good week, a brilliant week. You know, they did look vulnerable. They looked really vulnerable. Clavan, another big mistake, positionally very, very poor, made a massive error for the goal that was taken very well by Nathan Redmond. But Liverpool looked like they could be exposed on the counter-attack again. And it kind of feels a little bit like the Borussia Dortmund of Jurgen Klopp's last season, where the creativity wasn't quite there. And they're taking things, they're rushing, that they're not, you know, they're not waiting for that moment to play that incisive pass. They're just shooting a goal and they're not embracing the Brazilian flair that they did at the start of the season. Mm. But anyway, with Coutinho back, I think it's going to be a really interesting game. Going to go 2-1 United.
Let's do the final question, because we unfortunately ran out of time today. The question is simply, at 28L5L, any chance you can get the podcast on Spotify? I have no idea, but it's something that I will look into between now and next week. I will see if we can get the podcast on Spotify. That would that'd be nice. That'd be cool. I'll try and do it. Anyway, guys, slightly short podcast this week without Lawrence and Chris. We got through as many questions as we can. Do keep them coming in on Twitter at the front 3 with the number, not the word, and definitely not at the font 3. A completely different group of lads. Our rival podcast in many ways. Guys, thank you so much for listening to the Q&A. Dave, until next week, where can the good people find you?
Well, firstly, obviously, go to the Front for a YouTube channel and just click all the videos because there's loads of good ones that come out. There's great analysis on Man City. There's some brilliant stuff from you and Chris about the, you know, the thing that we mentioned before, Arsenal, Alexis Sanchez, PSG.
Mm-hmm.
But also jump on to Statman Dave if you want to see a little bit of Dimitri Payet, where he should end up.
Do. Go and check that out, guys. Go and check that out. You can find me on Twitter at Adam Boltwood. Do look out for the bonus pod coming up on Saturday in your podcast feed with Flav. A really interesting conversation. We had a great time recording it, so hopefully you'll have a great time listening to it as well.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news.
Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Did you know that Xavi Hernandez used to scan over 8 times in the 10 seconds before receiving the ball? It's therefore not surprising that he rarely lost it. Scientific studies have shown just how important scanning is in soccer. Players who scan more, for example, make twice as many successful forward passes than those who scan less. But training this skill is difficult, and that's why thousands of players trust Be Your Best, the soccer training app in virtual reality, designed to improve players' game intelligence. To learn more, visit beyourbest.com and use code POD20 to get 20% off your first subscription.
Enjoy the weekend's football, and we'll see you on Monday.